Fairfax County Police Department et al. Versus Neal and Neal versus Fairfax County Police Department et al. Elizabeth D. Tier, County Attorney, Karen L. Gibbons, Deputy County Attorney, Kimberly P. Baucom, Senior Assistant County Attorney, Stuart A. Raphael, Trevor S. Cox, Matthew R. McGuire for Fairfax County Police Department et al. Edward S. Rosenthal, David C. Rohrbach, Daniel C. Collier, Eden B. Heilman, Jennifer M. Safstrom for Mr. Neal.
All right, we have presumably four counsel in the room. Is that correct? In the virtual room? Who's going to argue?
Should just be
Fairfax?
Two, Your Honor.
Who's going to argue Fairfax Police Department versus Neal?
Good morning, Chief Justice Lemon. Stuart Raphael for the Fairfax County Police Department.
And who is going to argue the main case for Mr. Neal?
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. This is Ed Rosenthal. I will be arguing both.
Both cases. All right. It appears that the court has allotted 40 minutes for these combined cases. Is it your understanding, counsel, that these are separate cases to be argued separately? So Fairfax County Police Department would be 20 minutes, and then the case of Neal versus Fairfax County would be another 20 minutes. You'd simply trade places in the argument cycle. Is that your understanding?
Chief, both attorneys have dropped. We're getting them back.
We have one counsel back. Wait just a moment, and we'll see where the other one is.
Chief, I see both on my screen.
You do? How about that?
Good morning, Chief, Mr.
Chief Justice. Listen, the clerk.
Mr. Raphael, are you? Oh, there you are. Okay.
Yes,
good.
I'm here.
All right, counsel, we have 40 minutes set aside, 20 minutes per case, and at this point in time, the only thing I can figure out to do is to call them separately as they are listed. So Fairfax County Police Department versus Neal is called first. Mr. Raphael, you are counsel, correct, for Fairfax?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Stuart Raphael for the Fairfax County Police Department. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for a rebuttal on both arguments. I'll primarily address why the circuit court erred in finding that ALPR passive use violates the Data Act, and I'll spend a few minutes on Neal's fee appeal. I want to make 3 points with regard to the merits appeal. First, the ALPR system here is not a covered information system because it doesn't access or store owner information in the other databases, the NCIC, VCIN, or DMV databases. Secondly, the remand hearing showed that owner information is accessed only when there's a criminal investigation exception. So the court should reconsider its ruling on that point in Neal 1. And then finally, at a minimum, the injunction in this case preventing the department from ever using passive ALPR use is overbroad and should be vacated for that reason alone. So let me start with the first point. The passive ALPR use here is not a covered information system. This court found in Neal 1 that the photo of the tag combined with the date and GPS information constituted personal information. But that's only half of the equation. In order to be an information system under the definition, it also has to have a second element, the name, personal number, and other identifying particulars of a data subject. And the key quote, I think, is from Justice Powell's opinion at page 348, where she wrote, an agency's record-keeping process is an information system if it contains both personal information and the name, personal number, or other identifying particulars of an individual. And we use the metaphor in our brief of water comprised of hydrogen and oxygen. You got to have both elements in order to have water. You remanded this case for further proceedings to determine a single factual question, which is whether the total components and operations of the ALPR record-keeping process provide a means through which a link between a license plate number and the vehicle owner may be readily made. So the focus here is on the ALPR record-keeping process. And on remand, it was conclusively established that the ALPR database does not connect to the NCIC, VCIN, or DMV databases. The trial court found at page 1599 that, quote, the ALPR record-keeping process does not itself gather or directly connect to identifying particulars. The officer has to close out of the software, has to open up the window for the NCIC, VCIN, DMV search, type in the number, and there's no connection between the databases themselves. Now, the plaintiff's position is that even if a police officer makes a phone call to the state police to call in the tag number, that information somehow becomes part of the ALPR record-keeping process itself. That just can't be right. That would mean that if an officer used the white pages or ran an internet search and found information that way, that information somehow becomes part of the ALPR record-keeping process as well. The plaintiff has no answer to that limiting principle problem. They would treat the relevant record-keeping process as anything known to Fairfax County police officers, but that would define the agency as coextensive with the record-keeping process used by the agency, and that just doesn't make sense under the statute. The plaintiff's interpretation is also inconsistent with the very structure of the Data Act. We pointed to all of the obligations that an agency has with regard to data that it curates, and these obligations are found in 2.23803A. And we gave four examples from paragraphs 4, 6, 7, and 9. The agency has to maintain the information with accuracy, completeness, timeliness. It's got to maintain a list of everybody who's got access to it. It's got to maintain for 3 years a list of anyone who did access it. And it's got to establish appropriate safeguards to secure the system. There's no way that a local police department could fulfill those obligations with respect to data maintained by the FBI, the Virginia State Police, or the Virginia DMV. Once the trial court found that there was no connection between the ALPR record-keeping system itself and these other databases, that was the end of the inquiry. And the facts are not disputed here. The question is, what's the legal conclusion from those facts? And once the fact was found that there was no connection between the systems, then this is not an information system under the Act. Now, I want to respond to an argument that my friend on the other side makes about referring to the word manual as it is used in 2.23801. The statute reads, information system means the total components and operations of a record-keeping process, whether automated or manual. And he says, well, manual means, you know, if you type in the number in the screen, or you call the FBI, the state police, that's the manual connection. That doesn't make sense, because the reference is to manual or automated use of the record keeping process. So we give a couple examples in our reply brief. Suppose for the sake of argument that the ALPR record keeping process had a field in it, and when the officer calls the state police and gets the vehicle owner information, he can type that information into the database. Well, that would be a manual input of data that the department would then be responsible for maintaining and curating. Alternatively, if you could push a button and have all of that, the information about the owner, automatically imported to the database, well, that would be an automated use combining those two required elements, the hydrogen and the oxygen, to make an information system. But none of that happens here. Because there's no connection, it's not a covered information system.
So turning to the second, Mr. Raphael,
yes, Justice Kelsey.
The thought there is, I mean, if I pop up Microsoft Word and it gives me an automated template for a resume, for example, there's an automated template. Or I pop up Microsoft Word and I literally start from scratch writing a document that ends up being a resume. Your distinction is drawing a distinction between automated and manual within the system. So if I'm misunderstanding, correct me wrong, the system does not automate any of this stuff. Even with the hot links, it doesn't automate any of this stuff. And it doesn't automate any connection to NCIC, VCIN, or the DMV.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So unless information system means the entirety of law enforcement and all information available to law enforcement, then it's got to be limited to simply the computer program and the software that runs it.
That's correct. I totally agree with that. And this court referred to the relevant thing to look at is the ALPR record-keeping process. The plaintiff's approach would be to say anything known to the police that they get from anywhere somehow becomes part of that record-keeping process, and that just makes no sense. as I said, they've got no answer to the limiting principle problem. Like, you know, the police officer calls somebody and gets information. If that's not inputted to a database, it's not data over which the police department has a responsibility to maintain in compliance with the Data Act. Now, that ties into this. Yes.
Can I bridge you over to your second point, which is, did Neal 1 overstate the criminal exception? You saw footnote 1 and 3, right, in Neal 1. They both deal with the questions that you're talking about. And the footnote 1 says, we're not dealing at all with anything other than passive in Neal 1.
That's
correct. Footnote 3 says, you know, we don't have a problem with investigations going forward, potential crime, no differently than a Terry Act analysis. So I'm really questioning your fear that Neal 1 overstated the exemption, because in the organization of this opinion, that only comes at the end. And it's really just covering a very narrow point, which is, you know, there's got to be something specific to the criminal investigation as opposed to a dragnet of all information.
So I think if the court, let me unpack that a little bit. If the court agrees with us that you don't have an information system here because you're missing the two required elements, then you really
don't need an exemption.
You don't get to the exemption. That's right. But this court in Neal 1, I think, reached out and said, assuming that these things are combined, then the exemption doesn't apply because there was no, you know, law enforcement purpose at the time Neal's license plate was captured. And the point we're making on that is there was a temporal flaw, a temporal assumption in the question that I think was incorrect. And that is the police they never ran Neal's license plate number, right? They don't run a plate through NCIC, DMV, VCIN, unless and until they have a valid criminal justice purpose. So you don't get the hydrogen and oxygen combined to make water until that happens. And that's why it was probably premature for the court to reach out and decide that question in Neal 1. And that's the thing that we think should be reexamined if the court agrees with us. And it was established clearly in this on the record here that under 19.2-389A1, the police can only run an NCIC or VCIN check when they have for purposes of the administration of criminal justice. And the testimony at page 966 of the joint appendix was all ALPR use is for criminal justice purposes. Now, the plaintiff says there's a gap between, you know, the criminal justice purpose in 19.2-389 and the exception in the Data Act for investigations and intelligence gathering related to criminal activity. We don't think there's a gap. But if there's a case where you might think that there is some kind of gap, I mean, that really should await a future case. You shouldn't reach out and decide that question now. Our point is simply that it was premature to rule that you never have a criminal investigation purpose when you run the plate through the DMV, NCIC, VCIN database. My third point
I'm not sure Neal 1 said anything as broadly as that, particularly with footnotes 1 and 3 cabining it.
We would welcome that clarification. I mean, that's another way to skin the cat here. If the court would clarify that, then I think that addresses the problem. The injunction, in any event, assuming you get there, was overbroad. This court said in Tran versus Gwynn that a court abuses its discretion by issuing an injunction that's overbroad and not tailored to the offensive activities. Here, the final order enjoins the department from the passive collection, storage, and use of ALPR data. That's at 2080 of the joint appendix. That order is overbroad in three fatal ways. First, it permanently prevents the police department from ever trying to create a passive ALPR system that passes muster under the Data Act. The Data Act doesn't prohibit the collection of personal data. It simply imposes procedural requirements and limitations for doing so. An injunction shouldn't prevent a department from ever trying again and doing it right, assuming you think we didn't do it right here in the first instance. Secondly, the injunction's overbroad because Neal concedes that data retention for at least 24 hours is permissible. That's at footnote 33 of his brief. But the injunction here wouldn't even allow for that. So it's even more restrictive than what Neal says the state police are doing. And then thirdly, the order is not specific to Neal. A narrow order would have limited the collection of data to just Neal's license plate. The circuit court and plaintiff treat this as some kind of class action case where he's representing literally every motorist in Virginia. And this issue, you know, is playing out at the federal level, too. We cited Justice Gorsuch's opinion in DHS versus New York, where he pointed out that courts should not enjoin the government to take or not to take some action with respect to those who are strangers to the suit. So in that respect, again, the injunction here is just way overbroad. Let me spend a couple minutes on the fee issue. The attorney's fee issue and Neil's appeal is moot if the court agrees with us and reverses the circuit court on the merits. But assuming for argument's sake that you reached the question, there was no abuse of discretion when the trial court determined that $75,000 was a reasonable fee, not the $643,000 that Neil claimed. Neil 1 was decided on cross motions for summary judgment. There was only one deposition taken. There was one appeal and then a remand trial. And although it lasted 2 days, the trial judge said he thought it was way too long. 2 days wasn't necessary. The plaintiff really overcomplicated the facts of the case, which were quite simple. The harder part of the case was the law, but the facts were very straightforward. And although the trial court judge said that he thought the county attorney was aggressive in defending the case, she did nothing improper or vexatious, and that the response by Neil was simply disproportionate. Neil sought compensation for 9 separate lawyers. After full briefing and argument with lots of detail about all the alleged, you know, errors in the bills and overstatements and so forth, the judge concluded that $75,000 was appropriate. Neil's main argument here is that the court should adopt the federal standard. And there are 2 aspects of that that I think are totally inconsistent with Virginia practice. One is that, you know, the federal standard uses this Hensley test, the so-called lodestar approach, where you take the reasonable, you know, the number of hours billed and then a reasonable fee, and you start with a number and then you might, you know, cut it down. The second aspect of it is that the trial judge is required to make findings with respect to each of the 12 Hensley factors. This court has never adopted either of those approaches. And what Neil is requesting here would really be sort of brand new in Virginia. We cited the Portsmouth case, Justice McCullough's opinion earlier this year, where the court upheld a $24,000 fee award and said that the trial judge is not required to make findings on all the factors. West Square decided in 2007. That was also a 2-day trial in a commercial lease dispute, and this court upheld a fee award of $10,000 out of 80,000 claimed. That's 12.5% of the amount sought. The trial judge concluded, without explaining how he got there, that $10,000 was reasonable, and this court affirmed, again saying you don't have to consider all the factors. And then in Holmes, 1999, that was a Consumer Protection Act case where this court upheld a $4,000 fee award out of $18,000 claimed. It said it didn't reach whether, you know, the Hensley test made sense, but plainly, if you don't have to start at the top and work your way down, it's not a lodestar approach. Now, the plaintiff cites some cases in Virginia where trial judges have used a lodestar approach. We're not saying a judge can't do that, but it's not an abuse of discretion not to. And I think Holmes and West Square and Portsmouth all show that. And I see I've got about 5 minutes left, and if there are no questions, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Ed Rosenthal, and I represent Mr. Harris and Neil. And I've had the privilege of representing Mr. Neil for a little over 5.5 years now in this case. I want to touch on 6 different items as briefly as I can. Number one, I want to say just a little bit about the fees appeal, but then I'm going to rest on the papers where answers to all of those points that Mr. Raphael made and the questions that the court made are addressed, and I think covered. The second is emphasize, as the court did in Neil 1, the remedial nature of the Data Act and the fact that that requires a liberal interpretation of its provisions, including the definition of an information system. Third, I want to deal with the remand, the specific instructions that were given to the trial court on the remand and the trial court's faithful implementation of those instructions. Fourth, what is it in the record of evidence and admissions below that shows that the elements, including the access to the ability to access the DMV VCIN information, and including the data that's automatically collected twice a day through that DMV VCIN network, known as the hot list, that is a part of the information system, not as we choose to define it, but as the chief of police defined it in the 2010 standard operating procedure, which says its purpose is to set out the operations, procedures, and parts of the ALPR program.
May I interrupt you there, counsel, and ask you this question? On the hot list, why isn't the hot list an obvious example of the appropriate criminality exception? So even if you get the information system definition satisfied by the introduction of DMV hot list plates, the hot list plates is limited to, you know, stolen vehicles that have been allegedly involved in crime. They don't just randomly send lists over there, do they?
No, Your Honor, you're quite correct, and that's been our position throughout. In the trial court and on appeal, we took the position and formally conceded, and it's noted in Neal 1, that the active use is not a part of our suit. We are only, and that's why passive use is not something nonspecific. Passive use is something that's well defined. It was defined by the Attorney General in his 2013 opinion. It was defined by the parties in this case in discovery and in motions and in a demur at the trial. It was defined very carefully and very definitively in the Neal 1 decision itself, and made quite clear that active use was not a part of the lawsuit.
Right. I follow that, but I must be missing your argument, because if the hot list brings in a license plate into the ALPR system, and it does so for purposes of law enforcement, and there's an active law enforcement investigation going on, even if it did identify the data subject, which it doesn't, why wouldn't that fall within the exemption? So in other words, even if you could pass the first test, which is information system, the exemption would pick up the hot list.
It does, Your Honor, and that's why we've never, pardon me for over.
No, go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're absolutely correct, and as I said, we've conceded that. That's been our position from the very beginning. It's the passive use, the collection of millions of tags for which there is not a bit of suspicion. Or need who aren't on the hot list. The cameras, Your Honor, take thousands, 2,400 pictures of license plates a minute, and they randomly collect all of these, amounting to thousands and even millions over the course of a year of collected plates. Less than 0.1% of those items are ever connected with a criminal investigation. And none of the ones that we're challenging, including Mr. Neal's, involved the hot list. But it's important that you should emphasize the hot list, because that is an automatic, direct connection between the state police's DMV VCIN database and the ALPR database. When it comes to active use, that is a part, a clear part. It's in the SOP. It was the testimony. It's quite clear that is a part of the overall ALPR information system. And, Your Honor, The active use, I can't believe that the county is arguing that active use is somehow an information system, but passive use, when you collect all this information and you have no valid purpose, that somehow that's not enough to be an information system that needs to be regulated by the Data Act's procedure for limiting the needless use, storage, collection of personal information.
All right, so if answer this one question for me, and then I'll leave it alone. Does the ALPR computer informational system have any software links to the NCIS, NCIC, the VCIN, or the DMV, except for the hot list link? Is there, are there any links? Sorry?
It does, Your Honor.
How?
Because the SLP says that it does. The SLP talks about having to verify any connection, having to keep a record of any information regarding a matter. It mentions the DMV VCIN database specifically at least a couple of times in the SOP. It was a critical part of our case and of the information. The specific parts of that definition can be
found.
So
the link you're talking about is you pull up the ALPR, you see the license plate, then you pick up a telephone and you call DMV or whatever, or you go in another software program. You go to a completely different source, and that's the link we were talking about in NEIL 1?
A record-keeping system can include many more than one process or computer application. Here, it's connected because the SOP says so. That is part of the procedure. Even more importantly, it's on the same computers with which they access the ALPR data and manipulate the ALPR data and collect information for reports and record keeping. And it's done by the same officers who are ALPR qualified by training, experience, and approval by the police department for using this technique. And those same officers are the one making the link. That's why the trial judge made a point of saying if the definition only dealt with automatic connections between databases or resources, then I might come to a different conclusion. But it says automatic or manual connections. Moreover, I don't think the court can ignore what it said and the test that it laid down in NEIL 1.
Let me interrupt you again and ask you a hypothetical. I'm on my computer right now, and I pull up Microsoft Word, and I have a document on Microsoft Word, and I'm ticking away at it, and I'm getting information from it, and I then go to a separate Adobe Acrobat program, and I copy and paste in that. Are there links between the programs just because I did that?
If you're being considered as an information system, then yes, because
so the Microsoft Word system includes the Adobe system just because I can take the information from one system and plant it in another. Is that what it means?
No, but you're defining down your system. You're saying the Microsoft Word system. It's not a white Microsoft Word system. You're doing this operation for a purpose. And there are total components and operations of what you're doing and a purpose. And if there was an SOP that says, and one of the things you can or should do is copy the information from Word, paste it into Excel, and then record both results somewhere in your record keeping, your iLeads and iMobile record keeping system, and it says, and that's part of the process, then yes, it's not part of the Word program, but an information system is much broader than that. And there's a reason for that. The Data Act is designed to protect, to eliminate the unnecessary compiling of information, of massive surveillance information about citizens that includes personal information to an individual that can be traced to an individual. It only applies to information systems because there are two things required. There has to be personal information. Neil 1 says there is personal information, that location information, the GPS readings of time and location, the pictures, that's personal information. It said that the license plate information depends on the context. It may or may not be personal information. But what it is here and what Neil 1 said, to find out whether this meets the test for an information system, you need to determine whether there is personal information, which Neil 1 says there is, and also a name, a personal number, or a or another identifying particular. And the court in Neil went through the process of saying about the rules of construction, where there are specifics, where there's a general category and specifics, the general category, in order to fit into the general category, you have to essentially have the same import. The examples that you're trying to include under the general have to have the same import as the other. Well, let's look at a name or a, now, if it has a name and personal information, that is the location information, it's an information system. The statute says that's the only requirement. If it has a personal number and the personal information, it's an information system automatically, the statute says. Let's think about a name. No one has examined this. The county has said nothing about a name or a personal number and how that would be sufficient to meet its test, which it says, well, we don't actually import the contents. We don't actually gather that data that's at DMV. Sure, we can get there, and we can get there in less than 2 minutes, as the court found, on the same computer and by the same officer. But they say somehow that doesn't work because it's not direct. And by direct, I think they mean automatic. So they're reading the word manual right out of the statute. But let's think of a name. Let's take a hard one. What if the name is John Smith, that we added to the ALPR geolocation information in this case, the name John Smith? Well, John Smith isn't the total identification of a unique person. You can't get to it without some kind of an outside index or list of names. And if that can be done, what Neil 1 said is there's a practical test for this that we want you to apply. And that test is whether the total components and operations of the record-keeping system, quote, provide a means through which a link between a license plate number and the vehicle's owner may be readily made, end quote. That's said twice, both at page 348 and page 350 of the Neil decision. So it uses words of capability, not of actual content. It doesn't say if the contents of DMV were ever imported into the ALPR database. They say, no, it can be broader than that. They say that's not the test. It doesn't have to be in the database. That is the content of all the details about the owner. But there has to be a means through which a link between a license plate number and the vehicle's owner may be readily made. That link is a potential. It's a potential. It's not the same as the information. And that's why the county police department is responsible for dealing, as the Data Act requires, with the geolocation in data, which is personal information. But until it acquires, but it doesn't, it isn't responsible for the contents of the DMV information just because it's accessible. But accessibility is the key in the test that Neil won, that this court's own words, by a unanimous court, said was the test for the trial judge.
May I interrupt you one more time and ask you this question? If what you're saying is true, does Fairfax County exaggerate what you're saying when they say, if the logic of what you're saying is true, then picking up the phone is part of the information system? Because that's manual, and even though it's not on the ALPR database, if you pick up the phone and call DMV and find out who the owner is, then that creates the link that you're talking about and throws the entire system out. Is that an overstatement of what you're saying, or do you own that?
We have made the argument, and that is an argument that we have made, that is a link to a link. But it's not our sole argument. Our main argument, Your Honor, is the SOP that says these techniques are part of our program.
What I'm trying to say is, if we rule for you and adopt your logic, I do not understand how it would not be true that your logic would say, you go to the ALPR and you go, oh, there's the license plate number. You pick up the phone and immediately you're violating the Data Act because you're trying to find out who the owner is that matches up to that license
plate. No, you're not violating the Data Act because you would have told people, number one, you would have provided a need for collecting and storing the information. The Data Act, as Mr. Raphael said, does not outlaw processes. What it does say is, if you're going to have an information system, you have to do certain things for data protection and privacy purposes. And one of those things is only collect and store information if you can establish a need for it in advance. With respect to active use, they meet that test because there is a need, and that is built right into the hot list. For passive use, it is what Neil One called a randomized surveillance program that collects millions of data points, personal information about people whose only wrong is driving on the streets of Fairfax County. That is what
Mr. Rosenthal, in the distribution of time here, Mr. Raphael has 5 more minutes. Yeah, if you want to be the last to speak, you can have that 5 minutes yourself, or you can continue right now with 5 more minutes on the clock for you, and then Mr. Raphael has the last word. Which one do you want?
I would like the former, Your Honor. I would like to have a 5-minute at the end, and I thank the court for that consideration.
All right. Well, you'll have 5 minutes after he has his rebuttal. You'll have your rebuttal. Mr. Raphael, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. To Justice Kelsey, to your hypothetical about using Word and turning over and filling something into an Adobe screen, I think that proves the point. The plaintiff treats the relevant record-keeping process as your brain, when you type something from Word into Adobe. the statutory focus is on the record keeping process itself, not the agency or not the person using the record keeping process. And in that regard, I think my friend has really misstated what this court decided was to be determined on remand in Neal 1. At page 348, the court wrote, "On the record before this court, however, we cannot say whether or not such a means exists as part of the ALPR record-keeping process. Accordingly, we will remand the matter to the circuit court for a determination of whether the total components and operations of the ALPR record-keeping process provide a means through which a link between a license plate number and the vehicle's owner may be readily made." So it's like it was as if you said, do you make the connection through Word to Adobe? Answer, no. Same thing here. It's undisputed that there is no software connection between the ALPR record keeping process and these other databases, with the exception of the hot list. And I want to turn to that. My friend, I think, misstates our position on that. The hot list does not download owner information. And this is only, you know, with active ALPR use. It downloads the plate information. And when an officer is in active mode and comes across a plate that's on the hot list, there's an alarm that sounds. The SOP directs the officer not to use software to connect something to the ALPR system, but then to go run the plate through these other databases to make sure that it's the person that they're looking for. It is not our position that active use and the hot list download is an information system. It is not, because it does not have the owner information that's required. My friend relies really, I think, entirely on the standard operating procedure, the SOP, to suggest that somehow makes the connection for purposes of determining if the ALPR system is an information system. That just can't be right. The SOP is telling the officer the procedures the officer has to go through. That doesn't convert the ALPR record-keeping system into an integrated database any more than having a standard operating procedure for you to type something from Word into Adobe turns Word into an integrated record-keeping process. The circuit court's factual finding we completely agree with. On page 1599, the ALPR record-keeping process does not itself gather or directly connect to identifying particulars of a vehicle owner. That factual finding is dispositive. The circuit court just got the wrong legal conclusion from it. With respect to the argument about we're dealing with the remedial statute here, you encountered that same claim in Daily Press, where Justice McCullough wrote for the court, the fact that you're dealing with a remedial statute doesn't really matter when the language is clear. And there's no argument here by my friend that the definition of information system is somehow unclear. You've got to have both of the elements, the personal information, the water, the hydrogen, and then the oxygen. You've got to have the name, identifying number, or other identifying particulars. And you do not have that in the ALPR record-keeping process. With respect to the Attorney General's opinion, which my friend mentioned, that I think had more relevance to the question of whether license plate information was personal information. That opinion just doesn't address the question you remanded here. It starts with the assumption that the data maintained by the state police constituted an information system. This court had to remand this case for a determination on that question. So the Attorney General opinion just doesn't answer it. Mr. Rosenthal has no answer to the limiting principle problem, no explanation for how an officer who consults the white pages or renders a Google search, why that information doesn't also somehow become part of the ALPR record-keeping process when it's clear that it does not. I think this case really involves a separation of powers issue. We pointed out how in 2015, the General Assembly considered legislation to amend the Data Act to allow for retention of license plate data for 7 days. The governor said, no, it should be 60. They couldn't reach agreement. And the governor vetoed the bill, saying it would be a 7-day limitation would be too short. What I think that shows is that this is a matter reserved for legislative judgment. It's a question for the legislature, not the courts. And for those reasons, the court should reverse and enter final judgment on the department's appeal and dismiss Neal's fee appeal as moot. Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the court. Let me start with the question about an information system. One of the things that the trial court had to do on remand was find out what the facts say about what is the information system. Among other things, and this is what the court said, the trial court, having now conducted a full hearing and observing the evidence presented, I must conclude that such a link exists. That's the means to a link between the license plate number that is searchable and digitized in the ALPR database and the owner information that resides in the DMV record. So he concluded, okay, then he says the ALPR system does enable police officers to cross-reference ALPR data with the identity of an individual. In other words, access to the license plate number stored in the ALPR system, quote, permits connection, close quote, to the identity of the vehicle's owner with a few clicks on the screen, all from the driver's seat of a police cruiser. In other words, the ALPR system provides a means. How else does one reliably define the scope other than just saying it's whatever the police department wants to say about it now, than to go to its own standard operating procedure, which is for the purpose of documenting the scope and components and operations of that ALPR system. It is the county and my friend, Mr. Raphael, who mistakes what is under consideration here. If this mere addition of a name, John Smith, can make something an information system, how can a connection that's part of your standard operating procedure not be part of that system? It's the license plate number. It's digitized. It's digitized for a reason. It's digitized so it can produce a link to search other databases, or so that a license plate acquired from another database can be used to search the ALPR database of these millions of innocent of the location information on millions of unsuspected, uninvolved citizens who drive in Fairfax County. And to search for that hit, where was that car on a certain, that belongs to Mr. Neal on a certain date and place? That's what the information system, as defined in the Data Act, was designed to do. And again, I emphasize, and the county has conceded this, that the Data Act does not outlaw systems that contain personal information. Even if they're information systems, they're not outlawed. They're only outlawed if they collect information randomly for no good reason and they don't follow procedures such as telling people we have their information, giving the people the right to challenge the accuracy of that information, and so on and so forth. There's a list in the statute of actions that have to be done if you operate an information system. It's not a crime for government to have an information. We don't contend that it's wrong just to have information. And that's why active use, we totally agree with Your Honor, that is why active use is something that is not a violation, because there is a need in advance. But with respect to the millions of data points on citizens who have done nothing wrong, that personal information should not be exposed to something that's as easily obtainable as the DMV information by qualified police officers. Thank you very much.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you for your arguments. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning.